opinion he had in mind. I've seen him. I've seen him ride. A rush of wind, a darkening tide, with wolf and eagle by his side. His buttocks firm and well-defined. My God, he looks good from behind. But I'm not the Indian you had in mind.
I'm not the Indian you had in mind. I've heard him. I've heard him roar. The warrior wild in the video store. The movies that we all adore. The cliches that we can't rewind. But I'm not the Indian you had in mind.
I'm not the Indian you had in mind. I've known him. Oh, I've known him well. The bear-greased hair, the pungent smell, the piercing eye, the startling yell. Thank God he's the friendly kind. But I'm not the Indian you had in mind.
I'm that other Indian.
The one who lives just down the street.
The one you're disinclined to meet. The Oka guy. Remember me?
Ipawash, Wounded Knee.
That other one.
The one who runs the local bar.
The CEO, the movie star.
The elder with her bingo tails.
The activist, alone in jail.
That other Indian.
The doctor, the homeless bum.
The boys who sing around the drum.
The relative I cannot bear.
My father, who was never there. He must have hated me, I guess.
My best friend's kid with FAS.
The single mom who drives the bus. I'm all of these. They are us.
So damn you for the lies you told, and damn me for not being bold enough to stand my ground and say that what you've done is not our way. But in the end, the land won't care.
Which one was rabbit?
Which one was bear?
Who did the deed and who did not? Who did the shooting? Who got shot?
Who told the truth? Who told the lie? Who drained the lakes and rivers dry?
Who made us laugh? Who made us sad? Who made the world Monsanto mad?
Whose appetites consumed the earth?
Wasn't me.
Wasn't me.
Wasn't me.
For what it's worth. Or maybe it was. But hey, let's not get too distressed. It's not as bad as it might sound. Hell, we didn't make this mess. It was given us. When we're gone, as our parents did, we'll pass it on. You see, you've learned your lessons well. What to buy, what to sell. What's commodity, what's trash. What discount you can get for cash. And Indians, well, we'll still be here. The real one and the rest of us.
We've got no other place to go.
Don't worry, we won't make a fuss.
Well, not much. Still, sometimes... Sometimes late at night, when all the world is warm and dead, wonder how things might have been had you followed and we led. So consider, as you live your days, that we live ours under the gaze of generations watching us.
Of generations still intact.
Of generations still to be. Seven forward, seven back.
Yeah, it's not easy. Of course, you can always go ask this buck you like so much, this Indian you idolize. Perhaps that's wisdom on his face, compassion sparkling in his eyes.
He may well have a secret song.
A dance he'll share.
A long-lost chant.
Ask him to help you save the world, save yourselves.
Go look at me. I'm not the Indian you had in mind. I can't. I can't.
Want to get a lefty?
One line I jotted down is going to come up later. The one who lives just down the street, the one you are disinclined to meet. This morning, along with UU congregations across Canada, we're addressing the theme of reconciliation this month, actually. The impetus to do this comes from our commitment as a faith tradition expressed by our leaders at the close of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. That pledge, made on our behalf, deserves to be read and reread from the pulpit of every UU congregation in Canada. And here it is in part. We, the Canadian Unitarian Council and the Unitarian Universalist Ministers of Canada, commit to a journey of healing and reconciliation between Canadian Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people. Today, as we acknowledge and accept our responsibility for truth-telling, for healing and reconciliation, we commit to these specific steps in advance of the journey. To assemble and promote educational materials for our congregations regarding the history and impact of the Indian residential school system. To create and promote a new program for the congregation about racial equality and intercultural competency. And to continue to encourage our congregations and their members to learn more about the richness of Aboriginal spirituality and cultures, working together to advance the struggle of justice for Aboriginal people. We must learn from these travesties, as well as from the strength and the courage and the honesty and the resilience and the success of those who survived the Indian residential school system. We have asked our congregations across Canada to read this statement. We want you to know that we walked with you. Here ends the quote. So the reason we're addressing reconciliation this month, so that's the reason we're addressing reconciliation this month. But before we begin to address the specifics of reconciliation with First Nations people, I'd like to set the stage with this sermon by talking about reconciliation as a spiritual practice in general. I recognize that for some people, the noun spirits and the adjective spiritual are uncomfortable terms. For some, they may imply a belief in the supernatural or a belief in a deity that doesn't fit into your understanding of how the world works. If I accomplish nothing in this sermon but to begin a dialogue around a more expansive definition of spirit and spirituality, then I'll be happy. I'm hoping that the next few minutes in this sermon will be useful for both of us, so I hope you'll listen carefully. Both of us, and that I hope that I make a point that you find interesting, and that I hope I'll hear from you later as to how I might refine it or how it works for you or doesn't work for you. So, the concept of spirit or spiritual refers to that animating or that vital life force within all living things. That spirit of life that we sing about here in our favorite hymn. That's made manifest when we interact with one another and with the world around us and with the world within, with our own thoughts, with our own emotions. Spiritual practice, then, is a practice that connects us in some way with something or someone else. And it connects us in a way that affirms and promotes healthy growth. We can certainly connect with things in unhealthy ways, ways that are not life and love affirming. I recall the line from somewhere, "So you want connection? How about I connect my fist with your nose?" That's not the kind of connection I'm talking about. Talking about healthy, growing connections. So, leaving those negative connections behind, I propose that the more positively and lovingly connected you are with the universe, and with people, and with animals, and with plants, with the planet and its systems, with the cosmos, with your own animal nature, with the emotions that you experience, with the reality of your place in the universe, then the more spiritual you are. Spiritual practices are those that you undertake consciously to make affirming, life-promoting connections and to strengthen those connections. These interactions enrich our lives, and when we limit these interactions, we deprive ourselves of one of life's greatest gifts. So I'm sure that most of you here today have things that you do consciously in your life to strengthen your connections to the many aspects of the world around you. I hope that attending here on Sundays is one of them. The appreciation for music, for example, is a spiritual exercise and experience for many. It connects to beauty and emotion. Gardening is a spiritual practice that we're looking forward to in a few months that connects many with the cycles of nature and with the miracles and the abundance of life. If we focus on what we're doing, almost anything in our life can be a spiritual experience. We can turn the most mundane, the most challenging exercise into an experience that heightens our sense of joy in participating in the gift of life that we've been given. For example, I'm fortunate to be able to heat my home primarily with an airtight wood stove. In the winter, the first thing I do in the morning is go to that stove, carefully clean the glass front so they'll be able to see the fire, break the coals, remove the ashes, rekindle the fire for the day. I take the time to watch the wood burn. I'm very aware of the miracle before me. Energy from a thermonuclear process in the sun transformed through a life process that bonds carbon dioxide to the air and hydrogen from the water that were sucked up by the roots to form the wood. The wood I'm burning is made almost entirely from air and water. And as I watch, the wood is converted back into air and water, releasing the energy of the sun to warm my home, to make my life in this winter climate possible. For me, that's a powerful spiritual practice. This kind of solitary practice, listening to music, building a fire, or silently meditating, are what we might think of first when we think about spiritual practices. But gardening begins to cross a line where we engage with living things. Gardening, to some extent, is a two-way spiritual experience. We have to take into account the needs of the plants, the needs of the plants that we're trying to nurture. I think we cross another threshold when we choose to see our relationship with animals as a spiritual experience. I was delighted when someone told me last summer that they were late for an appointment with me because it was raining, and they had felt compelled to remove the many worms that had crawled onto the sidewalk in front of them so they would not be crushed underfoot. How many people have ever done that? I'm not ashamed to say so. Removed a worm off the sidewalk to the safety of the grass. That's a spiritual practice connecting you with the worm. And so we can move up the scale from the spiritual interaction with an earthworm to an interaction with a dog or a cat to an interaction with another human being. So let's turn for a moment from that word spiritual to the word reconciliation. To the Commission on Truth and Reconciliation, reconciliation is about establishing and maintaining a mutually respectful relationship between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal peoples in this country. In order for that to happen, there has to be an awareness of the past, an acknowledgement of the harm that has been inflicted, atonement for the causes, and action to change behavior. I think that definition can be generalized. Reconciliation is about establishing and maintaining a mutually respectful relationship between individuals. This reconciliation with another person is a spiritual practice. It strengthens a connection in your life and in the life of the person that you reconcile with. In this context, reconciliation is not always about making amends for past wrongs. Even in the case of the residential schools in Canada, no one is suggesting that reconciliation is the sole responsibility of those who set up the schools and who maintain them. It's the responsibility of all Canadians. Because establishing and maintaining mutually respectful relations between all Canadians is a spiritual expression of our first principle, to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. To do that, you need to listen to the stories of the other person. We must become aware of the past that has shaped that person. And when those stories reveal how a person has been hurt by our society, then we have a responsibility to try to heal those wounds and to change the system. I don't mean to imply that this is easy work. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission has taught us that, if nothing else. This morning we sang, "Let Love Continue Long." And the third verse reads like this. If we in love unite, debate can cause no strife. For with this love in sight, disputes enrich our life. For with the bond of human love, disputes can mean a richer life. Reconciliation often begins with disputes, but working through those disputes can be a spiritual experience that yields a richer life. It's significant that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission came into being from disputes that were waged in Canadian courts, legal battles. If we can now learn from this experience and move effectively from dispute to reconciliation, then our country and the world will be a better place, with healthier connections between peoples. It's my hope that in the months and the years ahead, this congregation will find ways to build stronger relationships with First Nations peoples, individuals, and communities around us. But the spiritual practice of reconciliation really needs to begin at a simpler level. So how do we begin to use reconciliation as a spiritual practice? Again, reconciliation by definition involves building respectful and healthy relationships. If you have, and we're all guilty of this, if you've ignored the plight of another human being, you have an opportunity for spiritual growth through an act of reconciliation. For some of us, this is very hard work. For reasons connected to our past experience or to our naturally inhibited nature, it's not always easy to reach out and build a relationship with another person, especially those who are different in significant ways from ourselves. Others who we have chosen to ignore in order to keep our lives within our own comfort zone. What was that line? The one who lives just down the street, the one we're disinclined to meet. I think this is one way that we can look at this congregation as a safe place to build respectful and healthy relationships. In this context, understanding the covenant that we have with each other, a covenant of commitment to the community, mutual respect, support for one another, that all creates a safe space. And reconciliation as a spiritual practice can be as simple as venturing out of our comfort zone to make a visitor to the congregation feel truly welcome. Remember what I just said about the need to reconcile with people you've ignored? Here's your chance. This isn't easy work, I know. Joseph Cherry has written, "If we have any hope of transforming the world and changing ourselves, we must be bold enough to step into our discomfort, and brave enough to be clumsy there." The message of reconciliation is that we must reach out to those that we have chosen to ignore. We did not willfully support residential schools in the past, but we chose to ignore the people whose lives were so devastatingly affected. So I have one last suggestion for those who might want to try reconciliation as a spiritual practice. For a year now, we've been opening the church on Saturday mornings, and we've progressed from serving coffee and donuts to serving a pancake breakfast. In the process, I've had the great pleasure of meeting people that I had previously been ignoring, our neighbors right here on England Street. It seems to me that if you've been ignoring someone, you have two choices. You either continue to ignore them, or you reconcile your relationship. So, you're all invited here on Saturday mornings between 10 a.m. and noon.
Good stuff.
And I don't mean to suggest that you can build a relationship and reconcile in one Saturday morning. But it is a start. However, if you all show up on Saturday, I may run out of pancakes. And may it be so.